You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, first of all, I love it. Clearly you've given up on trying to have any sort of neutrality in this interview.
The Wire.
In recent years, Aotearoa has seen a rise of far-right-wing ideologies. Today I speak to Senior Lecturer of Counselling, Human Services and Social Work at the University of Auckland, Ian Hislop, about this phenomenon and what it means for the future of Aotearoa and its people. Here is that interview. Are there different factors that can be attributed to this phenomenon, or are we just seeing a natural pendulum swing?
I think there's a bit of both going on, probably, Beth. We do swing from left to right historically, but I think that the depth of populist right-wing ideology has increased significantly over the last several years, and it's not just in Aotearoa. It's consistent with a shift around the world, in Europe and South America, and of course in the US with the kind of Trump regime, and now we have a clearly fairly hard right coalition government elect, and it's a mixture of things. The ideology of it is interesting because it's old fashioned economic sort of fundamentalism, pro-business policies, but there's also elements of social conservatism and nostalgic calls back to things past, and elements of racist policy.
Mm.
Yeah, all of that stuff. So, if you look at those coalition agreements, ditching fair pay agreements, extending 90-day trials for new workers, reducing tenancy termination requirements for landlords, generally looking after the bosses. But then you've also got all that pushing back on progressive policy in relation to Te Reo Māori, governance arrangements, references to the treaty principles and legislation, scrapping the Māori Health Authority, all of that, policy and the Kotahitanga pushback that we saw up in Waitangi and have seen toward the Kingitanga and Ratana. That's very interesting times, and it's all to do with this genesis of right-wing thinking and policy and how that's come about.
It seems to be sort of a regression dressed up as a commitment to tradition or a nostalgia for tradition, as you sort of mentioned. Are these reactionary politics, and what are they in response to, or do you think they stem from fear?
I think a lot of it stems from fear and insecurity because of the times we live in, the spectre of climate crisis, uncertainty around the world, lots of war in Europe, the subjugation of Palestinian people by Israel and funded by the states. And I mean, the Trump phenomenon is interesting because they've cashed in on, I guess, suspicion of the liberal state itself, where the progressive state is seen as the enemy of the people. And all that kind of fear and insecurity, I think, uncertainty, makes people susceptible to a politics of blame and division and self-interest. And the idea that the post-war welfare state and visions of growth and prosperity, all that's been sort of shaken. So that, the nostalgia you talked about, going back to an imagined time of national unity, racial harmony, that all that morally conservative, anti-woke sort of rhetoric, New Zealand First manifesto, that all plays into that that fear and insecurity, harking back to a time when things were simple and clear and people were looked after and better, or at least that's the illusion.
Mm. Would you say the rise of the right in Aotearoa has led to increased polarisation throughout the country? And if so, what are the implications of this for our society and for social cohesion?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think we have become more polarised, and we're seeing that. In some ways, I think it's useful to have some of these debates and get some of these things out in the open. And we have got a significant pushback against this right-wing ideology. And, equality and freedom are very appealing to people, and people end up voting against their own interests because, in the sort of ACT Party argument. You know, people are seen as these discreet, selfish, self-interested creatures making free choices, you know, based on their own interests, and that they're seen as normal and natural, and we're all responsible for the free choices that we make and all that kind of thing. And, of course, you know, that kind of thinking is threatened by communal social arrangements, by, you know, the kind of values and beliefs you get in Māori social structures.
Mm-hmm.
I think that accounts for some of that sort of negativity directed towards the idea that in supporting Māori social structures and aspirations, we're somehow undermining, you know, the natural politics of Pākehā New Zealanders, which I think is a vicious lie, but it's a powerful and emotive lie. And, you know, that does create fear and division, but I think once things are explained and unpicked and understood a bit better, there's a chance of a more progressive way forward.
Does the rise of the right in Aotearoa pose a threat to the structure of our political systems or even human rights when we look at the implications for co-governance arrangements, for instance?
Well, I think it can do. And, I mean, certainly if you look at the US example, you know, the liberal state is seen as the enemy. Because equality is defined as the right to compete, and any effort to level the playing field, you know, to reduce disparities of wealth and power, that's seen as unfair and as a break on freedom. So it works very well as an ideology for the rich and powerful, but not so well for the socially disadvantaged. And as I said, the unfortunate thing is that people who don't benefit from those policy ideas end up, you know, endorsing it at the ballot box. So, yeah, I mean, right-wing governments eventually, you know, lean into being authoritarian and totalitarian and reduce the opportunity for democracy and freedom. And you know, it shows, I guess, some of the limits of social democracy, and that's the scary thing. A bit like the US and their defence of human rights globally, but their preparedness to trample on the human rights of the Palestinians. It kind of exposes some of the contradictions that sit behind liberal ideology internationally.
Mm.
And yes, I think potentially there is a threat to our democratic freedoms, and that's one of the things that we need to educate ourselves about and be vociferous in defending.
How can we do that?
Well, I think we need to have the dialogue. We need to speak up. We need to call out oppressive policies when we can. And, you know, if that means protest and, you know, people standing up for themselves collectively, then, you know, it may look, you know, divisive and noisy and not the kind of New Zealand we'd perhaps like, but I think if you don't have the debates, if you don't call out the ideology behind the populist right, then you end up slipping into a very unfree society. So it's important that we push back, and we're seeing some of that. You know, we're seeing it at Waitangi, we're seeing it in movements around calls for the government to develop a better attitude to the genocide in Palestine, a more supportive attitude to the Palestinian people that looks like a resolution that is fair and reasonable. And I guess, you know, this underlying idea that self-interested accumulation and compounding of wealth in the hands of individuals is, you know, the natural and normal appropriate way of living. We need to find ways that are less exploited because the planet can't take being hammered to death by a self-interested, business-focused, capitalist mode of development. And we need to move on from that. So we need to have those conversations. As the old anarchist thinker Noam Chomsky said, you know, people are fed on necessary illusions and emotionally potent oversimplifications. So we need to think below those oversimplifications, think for ourselves, and understand that we share the planet together and need to look after each other. And it's not all about self-interest. Freedom and equality aren't what the ACT Party tell us they are.
Yes, and there's this sort of blurring of lines between the definitions of equality and equity, I think, which is
absolutely
extremely dangerous.
That's right. And, you know, wealth and power don't naturally accrue to those who deserve it the most and work the hardest. That's probably the biggest myth of all.
Mm.
Wealth is our recruit are those who have wealth and power in the first place, and this in the kind of system that the right to proclaim is normal and natural, and we need to see below that illusion.
It's the neoliberal ideal, isn't it?
It's the American dream.
It's the American dream.
dare I say it best, you know? But, I think people are beginning to, I think, see beyond some of that. And, I think people live in the shelter of one another. I think human solidarity, compassion and empathy are normal and natural. And those are the kinds of values that we need to embrace if we're going to move forward and, live the kind of life that we could as human beings. And people call me an old-fashioned idealist, but I don't make any apologies for that. I think we can live in better ways. I think we can find ways of, fostering compassion and understanding rather than competition and self-interest. And I don't think the consumption and accumulation of assets is the meaning of life. I think it's what keeps the wheels of a capitalist economy moving, but it doesn't actually lead to happiness or fulfillment. And that's a lie, essentially.
That was Senior Lecturer of Counselling, Human Services and Social Work at the University of Auckland, Ian Hislop, speaking to me about the rise of far right wing ideologies in Aotearoa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.